you didn't do that, but when somebody else would take a little piece of paper with a tape on it, that's before we had stickies, I was growing up, and you'd come up to somebody and say, "Hey, buddy, how you doing?" You know, and slap them on the back, and on this little thing it says, "Kick me." Okay. One way that you can paint "kick me" on there is to be a leader. Now, people who do little in life have less to be thanked for and less to be criticized for. You don't do much. What are people going to criticize you about except not doing anything? And if you're not doing anything, you probably don't care anyway. Aristotle said, "Criticism is something we can avoid easily." You want to avoid being criticized? Criticism is something we can avoid easily by saying nothing, by doing nothing, and by being nothing. You don't say anything, who's going to criticize you for what you said? If you don't do anything, who can criticize you for what you do? And if you're not anything and you just don't get involved, you can only be criticized for not being involved. Leaders come in many forms. You know, leaders are not just great people over nations and that type of thing, but leaders are parents. You know, a parent leads children. Leaders are bosses. Leaders are people who serve, who get in there and do things to make sure it's set up or done or handled, to run smoothly and so forth. Leaders are deacons, ministers, they're teachers. A teacher leads the students towards a certain outcome that they're interested in. But if you're going to be a leader, then you have to understand that criticism comes with the job. It's part of the job description, it seems. And one of the greatest tests of leadership is how one responds to critics. If you're going to be criticized, how do you respond? What do you do? What do you say? How do you handle it? What should go through your mind? And actually, you can't even serve effectively until you learn how to properly handle criticism. So I'd like to talk about that today. And there may be some of you who are even a bit discouraged right now, or maybe used to serve or used to lead, but you've stepped back from it because when you got in there and you did something, somebody criticized you for it, and they didn't like how you did it, and so you withdrew. So you'd be like Aristotle says. You don't say anything or do anything or be anything, then you won't be criticized. Today I'd like to encourage you as a servant leader to serve in spite of criticism you probably will receive as a result, and to give you some principles you can use in dealing with criticism. And this might be handy in a lot of different areas of your life, whether it's at work, whether it's in your family, whether it's at school, whether it's in the church. When you're criticized, how do you handle it? Some of these principles are found in the book of Nehemiah. Now, you could go into probably any book of the Bible, look at how some of God's servants were criticized and how they handled it, how Christ handled it, how the apostles handled it. But we're going to just go to Nehemiah today predominantly and look at the way one person handled criticism. And then let's learn some principles from this. Turn to Nehemiah chapter 4. In Nehemiah chapter 4, the circumstance here is that the Jews had been taken captive by Babylon. They were now on their way back to begin rebuilding the city that was destroyed. And Nehemiah had finagled a little bit. He'd worked some of the angles. He'd spoken with the king. He'd asked God, of course, and he pleaded with those in charge to be able to get a group of people to go back. And he had a vision that the city of Jerusalem could be restored somehow to some degree. And so here's where we find him leading this group of people back, and they're beginning to rebuild the wall. In Nehemiah chapter 4, verse 1, New Century Version says, when Sanballat heard we were rebuilding the wall, he was very angry, even furious. He made fun of the Jewish people. He said to his friends and those who were with power in Samaria, now Sanballat is, of course, talking to other people. He's criticizing, of course. He said, what are those weak Jews doing? Will they rebuild the wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Can they finish it in a day? Can they bring stones back to life from piles of trash and ashes? In verse 3, Tobiah the Ammonite, who is next to Sanballat. Now, you know how it usually is with criticism. If you're going to criticize someone, you're not going to talk to someone who may not agree with you. You generally will talk to somebody who's going to say, yeah, and will also criticize. So you're going to pick out people who are going to be in kind of a negative frame of mind to begin with. And so he talks to Tobiah the Ammonite, who is next to Sanballat. And Tobiah says, a fox climbed up on that stone wall they're building. I mean, that wall is so ridiculous or even trying that a little light fox climb up on it and think it'll tumble right down. Even what they're doing is stupid, it's no good. And a lot of criticism was involved with this. I want to give you the first principle regarding criticism, and that is to expect criticism. You kind of expect it. It kind of goes with territory, and whatever we do, you're going to find that everybody doesn't like what you do. You can pretty much guarantee that no matter what decision you make, no matter what actions you take, no matter how you do it, you'll be criticized by someone, even no matter how well you do it. I was at a seminar one time, and this was a guy that taught public speaking for a living. That was his business. And he said something, and I may have mentioned that here before, but something that stuck with me would be a good idea for any of you who do public speaking or just about anything else. He said, no matter how good you are, no matter what material you have to present, no matter who you are or whatever you say, 3% of the people in the audience are not going to like it. This is just a basic rule. If you got 100 people in the audience, 3 people are going to think, that really stank. I don't like that guy at all. You know, you might have, you know, the rest of the people, 97%, saying, oh, that was really good. Well, that was helpful. I've just learned to expect that everybody is not going to like everything. You can please some of the people some of the time. You can't please all the people all the time and that type of thing. Just kind of expect it. Every person of note in the Bible who did anything for God ended up being criticized. I mean, you look and we could go into a series of sermons on the criticisms of Moses that he received from the children of Israel, that he was simply trying to serve. And you can think back time after time after time that people were saying, Moses, you know, why did you bring us out into this wilderness? What are you trying to do? You just want us to starve. Criticized time after time after time. You can look at just about anybody else in the Bible, and they were criticized. Jesus Christ was God in the flesh, and he lived a perfect life, and they actually killed him. So, no matter how good you do it, somebody is bound not to like it. Why will you be criticized? Why do people criticize other people? For one thing, if you're a leader particularly, you have to have vision for what you're doing. I mean, if it's on setting up a potluck, you got a vision as to how you see that it needs to be arranged in order for it to happen. If it's teaching Sabbath school, you got some vision as to what the outcome needs to be and how you're going to go about it. If it's doing your job at work, you've got some vision as to how that needs to be accomplished. And vision is a very easy thing to criticize. If you've got a vision, it's very easy to criticize. Nehemiah had a vision. He had a vision of Jerusalem being rebuilt. Let's start with the wall. And he was criticized for really a very good and positive vision. Joseph literally had a vision from God, and he was criticized by his family and sold into Egypt. Again, Moses had a vision for Israel. Paul had a vision for the Gentiles and the others of God's people. And you could give a series of sermons on the criticisms of Paul. Go into the book of both books of Corinthians are rife with criticisms of what Paul was doing and how he was doing it, and his presence isn't very bold, and he's just a weak guy, and one thing and the next, and criticized and criticized and criticized, even though he had vision. Visions are very difficult to defend against criticism, because, as Andy Stanley says, the very nature of a vision is that there is far more solid information on the what side of the occasion than the how side. We want to rebuild Jerusalem. You know, we need to get in there and start building the wall. But how are you going to do that? There's a bunch of pile of ashes there. How are you going to do that? There are people all around you that want to keep you from doing it. How are you going to do that? It was very easy to criticize a vision. And a cynic will always be able to poke holes through a vision, even a God-given vision. John chapter 15, verse 20, Christ said, "No servant is greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will persecute you." Kind of got to expect it. Another reason you'll be criticized is that your decisions that you make as a leader, as a servant, the actions that you make are going to be a threat to someone else oftentimes. You know, if you've got some vision on how to set up a buffet and somebody else has always done it another way, then you're a threat to the person that's always done it this way. And you do it this way, well, that's not how we've always done it. Or what are you trying to do? Take my job? There's always something that somebody is going to not appreciate. Sanballat and Tobiah had a vested interest in not having the walls built, because they were kind of the leaders of the area now. And then if we get all these Jews coming back, you know, and they're starting to rebuild Jerusalem and they make themselves a presence again, what's that going to do to our power? And they were concerned about their own power. Sometimes you're going to step on toes and challenge someone else's vested interest in something. Now, you don't want to go around just trying to step on toes. On the other hand, if you're never going to step on toes, you can do it the same way Aristotle did. Never say anything, never do anything, never be anything. We as a leader have to do things, or a servant have to do things in a way that will be as least offensive as possible, but we have to do things. If you simply want to serve people, someone else may see that, well, that's my job. What are you going over and visiting that widow for? Well, she's my widow. You see, I've been taking care of her. Well, there's actually room for service on every area, in both sides. Sometimes people criticize you to cover up their own inadequacies or trying to keep their job. Leadership, by definition, is change. You're leading. You're making a change in people's lives. You're making a change in sometimes how things are done. Change, by definition, is a threat to people. So, kind of understand why people criticize. Now, another reason you will be criticized is because you deserve the criticism. you've done something stupid. You haven't done something well. You've done something inappropriate. So there are many reasons that we can be criticized. Someone once said that sometimes your greatest critics, sometimes critics are your best critics. Sometimes critics are your best critics. There's maybe somebody that they're not necessarily just trying to help the situation, but just trying to criticize, but you ought to give thought to, is there something there? Is there a reason why I'm being criticized? And we should listen. We'll talk more about that later. You might consider that as a leader, if you are always right, then you're not always right. Because nobody is always right. So you might think, you know, if you are criticized once in a while, say, well, they're all wet, and I'm all right. Well, maybe most of the time you're right, maybe hopefully a good portion of the time you're right, but realize that sometimes they're going to be right, no matter what their attitude or who they are. So the number one principle regarding how a leader handles criticism is to expect criticism. Number two, the second principle on how a leader handles criticism is to source the criticism. What is the source of the criticism? Where is it coming from and why? And you've got to consider that. Nehemiah chapter 2 and verse 10. Nehemiah chapter 2 and verse 10. What was the source of Nehemiah's criticism? It says, when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official heard of my arrival, they were very angry that someone had come who was interested in helping Israel. Well, you see that the source of his criticism is someone who is not interested in helping God's people. They were interested in their own benefits, their own aggrandizement. They weren't interested in helping. Now, if someone's interested in helping, then you may be able to trust that criticism a little better. But if you know that their motive, or you feel their motive, is not to help, then you've got to source that and act accordingly. Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 19. When Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem the Arab heard of our plan, they heard what our vision for Israel was and for the city of Jerusalem was. They scoffed contemptuously. What are you doing rebelling against the king like this? Even had an accusation. Well, you're going against headquarters. You know, you're just go out there on your own. You know, the king didn't give you permission to do this. Well, the king did give Nehemiah permission to do it. But they were throwing out a false accusation to bolster their own goals. He says, but I replied, the God of heaven will help us succeed. We, his servants, will start rebuilding this wall, and you have no stake or claim in Jerusalem. I'm sorry, but we're right on this. We're going ahead. We're going to make it work. He sourced the criticism. Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem were enemies of Israel and enemies of God. And for Nehemiah, that's all he needed to know in figuring out what to do with this criticism. They oppose God, they're going to criticize Nehemiah. The second principle is to source that criticism. The source oftentimes will tell you more about the criticism than the criticism itself. Where is it coming from and what is their motive? Now, a couple of weeks ago, I gave a sermon on judging. It had to do with the judicial system and justice and judging. And you got to be careful because we don't always make the right judgment. We may source their motivation. You may not know their motivation. God knows the heart. You may have to look at the fruits and see what are the fruits of what they're saying. What are the fruits of what they're doing? And then maybe that'll help you source that criticism. Is the critic trying to help you? Is he trying to help those you're trying to serve? Or is the critic trying to help himself or herself? Sanballat was obviously not trying to help Nehemiah. You know, his approach was not, hey, you guys are coming to build the walls of Jerusalem. You know, guys, don't quit your day job. I mean, really, I know you're trying to do a good job here, but you guys are not stonemasons. I mean, if a fox walks up on that wall, it'll fall down. Let me show you how to build it better. Now, that would be a criticism, is that you're not building the wall very well, but let me show you how to build it better. Let's see if we can get together and make this work. And so there's a criticism, but the attitude behind it is to help move forward with a godly project or with the right project that's being involved here. Emmett Fox once said, criticism is an indirect form of self-boasting. Now you have to kind of source it and say, is this person just putting themselves up because maybe they feel you're taking their job, or maybe they feel inadequate because they tried and they weren't successful at something? Maybe it's just their self-boasting. That's exactly what Sanballat and Tobiah were doing, is they were self-boasting. You guys can't make this work. The famous philosopher Tyne Daly. Remember Tyne Daly? What's that?
I didn't know she was a philosopher.
She's not, actually. Cagney and Lacey, does that kind of ring a bell? She was one of Cagney or Lacey, whichever. Anyway, Tyne Daly made a great, maybe my favorite quote of the day here. She said, a critic is someone who never actually goes to the battle, yet who afterwards comes out shooting the wounded. So you think about that. If you're involved in doing something and serving and doing your job or whatever, and you've got a person who they've never been involved with it, they just like to sit back, and they're not trying to make things better, but they're sitting back watching. You know, when you're out there doing the work, you're there doing the serving, the leading, or whatever, and getting things done, and you kind of mess up, the moment you mess up a little bit, then they're there, and they're out shooting the wounded. Okay? So, is this person one who is really trying to help, or are they just looking for something to pick apart? And actually, they maybe just be demoralizing rather than actually helping. So a critic is someone who never actually goes to the battle, yet afterwards comes out shooting the wounded. Is that the source? On the other hand, consider Abraham Lincoln. He said he has a right to criticize who has a heart to help. He has a right to criticize who has a heart to help. And if a person has that, their criticism will not be in the form of talking about somebody else's, you know, what they're doing wrong, but they'll be in there saying, hey, you know, actually, I think we could improve it this way. You know, and actually, you're not doing a very good job building that wall, Nehemiah. You're obviously not a stonemason, but I got a bunch of stonemasons here that can really help put it together. Okay, and I want to help you guys to build this city again to what it once was. Okay? He has a right to criticize who has a heart to help. So when you're sourcing the criticism, is this person actually trying to help? And chances are, if they are, they've got something in their mind that can help. A Roman scholar and statesman, Marcus Cicero, he said, I criticize by creation, not by finding fault. I criticize by creation, not by finding fault. I see something that is wrong. I see something that could use improvement, and I find a way to improve it. I find a way to get in there and make it better. And if you've got somebody who's in there and he's in with you, and he or she is there, you know, setting up and helping with you, and then offers a suggestion and say, hey, you know, I wonder if this would work a little better than what your idea was. It was kind of a criticism of your plan or your idea, but they've got a creation there of something that can help out. So if you're criticized by a trusted source, I think you'll automatically give the criticism a little more weight. Well, they kind of had some good ideas in the past, and maybe their way will work a little better than mine. Maybe I wasn't thinking of all of the ins and outs of it. And you give that weight to criticism. Now, on the other hand, if you're getting criticism from someone who is just that critic, the one that always comes out shooting the wounded, don't dismiss it just because they're that way. Because they may have some point once in a while. And generally it'll be once in a while. Because if they really have a heart to help, they'll have a different attitude and approach. But even your worst critic can sometimes be your best critic. So learn to recognize that some people are just naturally critical. A book called Soul Salsa by Len Sweet, he says, what's true in nature is true of human nature. 95% of the seed you plant is good, 5% is bad. You can trust 95% of the people. The other 5% of the people are crooks, cranks, cheaters, and crackpots. As a general rule, it's kind of like that 3% deal. Somebody's not going to like it no matter what, even if it is good. He says, do you live your life ruled by 95% or the 5%? Now, has that ever happened to you where you received the criticism and you said, if that's the way it's going to be, let them do it. Forget it. I probably can't tell you how many times I thought that. You know, to where, and I'm a wuss. I got to admit, I'm a wuss. You know, when I'm criticized, I take it very seriously, from a crank or a crackpot or not. Because if I hurt somebody instead of helped, I take it very seriously. And my thought is, forget it. Let somebody else take the heat. I know another minister had, in the last year or so, moved into a church area, and he was just getting all kinds of heat for a lot of different things. He said, I was really thinking about early retirement. I was just, you know, and that's the effect it has. I think most of us do. As I said, we like to be thanked, and not being thanked is a little demoralizing, and being criticized is very demoralizing, especially if you're trying your best. But if really you're doing the best job you can and 95% of the people are appreciative and positive, focus on that, not the negative, because if you focus on just the negative, you will back off and not serve, and that's not right. Bill Cosby said, I don't know the key to success, but the key to failure is trying to please everybody. Not going to happen. I remember one time at the feast, I gave a sermon that I obviously thought was pretty good, otherwise I wouldn't have given it. But right afterwards, almost didn't get down after the amen, after the last song, and I got approached by a lady, and this lady, she ripped me up one side, across the top, and down the other, and then went to the middle and ripped me up the middle, and then cut me in half, and ate me up, and chewed me out. I mean, she says, that sermon, I hated it. She said it was the worst thing, it was offensive, and man, she was just, you know, I didn't feel real good about that point. And I made it through the feast, and she's the only one that had said anything, and afterwards I did like I usually do after the feast, and I asked the congregation, so what did you feel was the most helpful sermon at the feast for you, or the one that was, you remember the best? And this lady says, you know that sermon you gave? She says, that helped me so much. That was the best sermon at the feast. So, go figure. You can't please everybody all the time. And you can't try. So when you're criticized, take the second step and source your criticism. The first is to expect it. The second is to source it. And the third principle, and of course this comes real early on and they kind of go together, but third one is to pray about the criticism. Pray about it. Nehemiah chapter 4 and verse 5. Now this occurred immediately after the criticism. fox is going to break down that wall. And Nehemiah's response, then I prayed. Now, he prayed about it, and I'm sure a few more words than this went into it. The prayer was probably multifaceted, but here's what's recorded about it. Nehemiah said, Nehemiah being a human being much like you and I are, and this is very possibly what you end up praying sometimes, hear us, O God, for we are being mocked. May their scoffing fall back on their own heads. May they themselves become captives in a foreign land. Let them see what it's like. You know, then maybe they won't be so critical. Don't ignore their guilt. Don't blot out their sins, for they've provoked you to anger here in the presence of the builders. He unloaded on God. Two times in this episode, Nehemiah prays, and this time it's obvious he was pretty upset. He was pretty angry. All the things he was thinking of, all the effort he went through and all the trying to go through the right channels and have this done, and all he gets is criticized. He prayed and he didn't hold back how he felt. He was very open with God. But you notice he took it to God. Now God has pretty big shoulders. You can look at others. David prayed similar prayers sometime. When he was upset, Moses, when he was criticized, he said, God, I quit. You know, I didn't sign up for this. So Moses was upset sometime. You take it to God. Why is it so important to pray when you're criticized? Well, for one thing, you're usually better off telling God how you feel than the person who criticized you how you feel, especially immediately. Because generally, don't you find your first reaction when you're in this day and age, you're criticized by email, your first reaction is to reply. You know, and you're working on this reply. And if you're wise, if you went that far, it goes in the draft file on the computer. It says, let's hold on to this for a little bit. And you go and you unload on God. And you talk to God about it. And then you respond, if at all. And you got to give it time, and you unload on God first. It's better to let God have the load than somebody else. Because chances are you're going to say it wrong, you're going to do it wrong, you're just going to find a conflict. So go to God. Proverbs 26, verse 4 says, when arguing with fools, don't answer their foolish arguments, or you become as foolish as they are. Getting into this deal where you're just going back and forth. It really doesn't accomplish anything. So, put it on God. Put your frustrations on Him. That's one reason to pray about it. We generally just end up justifying ourselves by criticizing the other person that criticized us. Okay, so go to God with it. Another reason to pray is to ask God, God, is there any validity to this criticism? What is it that I need to learn from this? And that may be multifaceted too. There could be character issues you need to learn. It could be that you really messed up. And you need to ask God to show you how to fix it, how to do better, how to act and to react. If we go in honest prayer to God, our sense of pride comes down. We're really opening ourselves up to God in humility. And that pride comes down and we open ourselves to examine if we need that criticism and if it is valid. Allow God to make you sensitive to the truth of the criticism, if there's truth in the criticism. And then ignore the rest. L.L. Bean, he'll make this kind of neat clothing and stuff, L.L. Bean catalog. But they had a formula in their customer service department. And L.L. Bean's formula is this. There are 25 complaints for every one that you hear. Think about that. If somebody complained about something, okay, so if I heard one, that means I didn't hear 24. Okay. Or I didn't hear 25. Is that people complain to other people. They don't generally complain to you. And sometimes you hear it roundabout. Sometimes they complain directly to you. So you're going to hear criticism. That falls into the first part, is kind of expected. And that's why it's important not just to dismiss criticism before you've prayed about it. Because chances are there may be something out there. Winston Churchill, he said, criticism may not be agreeable, but it's necessary. It fulfills the same function as pain in the human body. It calls attention to an unhealthy state of things. Chances are there's something. And even if attitudes aren't exactly right, there may be something. If approach isn't exactly right, there may be something. So ask God, what can I learn from this criticism? On the other hand, we talked about the 95% are generally positive, and that's so. And with thankfulness, when Christ healed 10 people of leprosy, how many responses did he actually get of thanks? One. Okay. So you got to look at it the other way, too, as people are generally more appreciative. And I'm sure the people that were healed of leprosy were very appreciative of being healed of leprosy. They just forgot to thank the source. Okay, so realize that probably people appreciate you more than what you hear also. So let it balance out. Don't just take it negatively. Okay, a third reason to pray is so that you can be clear about your own motives. Be clear about your own motives. Why are you serving? Why did you do what you did? Was your motive to step on somebody's toes? Was your motive to take somebody's job? Was your motive to aggrandize yourself and to show how great you are? If you got the wrong motive, chances are you are receiving valid criticism. So your motives need to be right as a servant and a leader. Most of us want to be people pleasers. We like the praise of people. We just do. And it's natural, it's built in, and it's okay as long as that's not our motivation for doing what we do. Our real goal and motive should be the applause of God, the praise of God. Are you doing things for a right reason, whether that's in your family, whether it's in the church, whether it's at work, in the neighborhood? Why are you doing what you're doing? Do you have the right motivation? You got to ask God for that. Len Sweet, in his book Soul Salsa, again says, who do you want to please the most? If it is God, then you can survive whatever is thrown at you. You're doing things for the right motives, and you can't end up being criticized. And if you know you're doing the right thing, go ahead and move on. If it's people, and your main motivation is just to serve people, or not serve people, but to please people, and make sure you don't have any complaints. It's can't please all the people all the time. It's like Bill Cosby said, the key to failure is trying to please everybody. If it's people, then you can count on betrayal, loneliness, mistrust, and failure. Wait for applause, and you'll wait forever. You'll wait for all that thanks to come rolling in. It may not come. Wait for consensus, and you'll wait forever. Wait for people's approval, and you'll wait forever. So how should we respond to criticism? Expect it, source it, and pray about it. The last principle I have, and I'm sure there are others, but the last one I have, is to continue the work. Continue the work. Nehemiah, when he was criticized, had three alternatives. What could he do when he was criticized by Sanballat, Tobiah, and Gershom? When people started opposing him with rumors, with resistance, with ridicule, one thing he could have done is to give up. Say, forget it. All I'm trying to do is help. I could go back to being a cupbearer in the king's palace, and I'd be a lot better off. I never took the heat there. And when we are criticized, we could give up. Let somebody else do this stuff, if that's all the thanks I get. Or he could have left the wall and go fight. He said, man, I'll go out there and I'll show them. You know, they'll think not build a wall. I'll just go out and destroy them. Then he would have left building the wall and he would have been involved in the fight. Or he could have built the wall and armed himself. Well, that's what he chose to do. Nehemiah chapter 4 and verse 6. Right after his prayer, what did he do? Got back on the wall and started building. Continued building. Nehemiah 4 verse 6. At last the wall was completed to half its original height around the entire city. For the people had worked very hard. You know, in the job we do, sometimes we wait until we've got a perfect plan or perfection. If I can't do this perfectly, I probably shouldn't do it at all. You know, the wall, they worked very hard and still was only half its height. But he worked, and he did the best they could under the circumstance, and there were still holes in the wall. You know, when we do our job, and no, it's not perfect. There are still going to be holes that people can poke through. It's not going to be exactly what our vision would like for it to be. We need to be able to do the best we can with what we've got to do. But he didn't allow his enemies to become the focus of his attention. He defended himself properly and did what he knew he should be doing. But he remained vision-centered in spite of the criticism he and his team received. When we're criticized, how do we normally respond? I can't answer for you. I know what human nature likes to do. We want to begin a dialogue with our critics. You know, I'll show you why I'm right. Now, if someone is the critic and they want to discuss how you can work to make it better, chances are they're not the critic, but they're one who is a helper. You know, he who has a heart to help has the right to criticize. But we can waste time and energy and thought trying to answer questions for people who are not interested in answers. We're trying to give them all the answers. They don't really want an answer. It's not their heart. You've got to consider that source again. We shift our attention away from being vision-centered to becoming critic-centered or self-centered, forgetting about the job and the task at hand. Never leave the wall to fight the enemy. You can spend all your time greasing the squeaky wheel, the critic, the complainer, the kook, if that's what it was, instead of doing the job. Remember Davy Crockett? His actual name was Fess Parker, but no. Actually, you remember Fess Parker? Davy Crockett? Remember this? Those of you that are young, I'm sorry, but you probably heard of Davy Crockett, but not Fess Parker. But there was this great show out in the 50s, I think it was. The 50s or early 60s? 50s? Okay. Davy Crockett, king of the wild frontier, killed himself a bar when he was only 3. You know, I don't know what he was doing in the bars then. I guess they didn't have age limits, but remember what his motto was? Was that a hand, Nancy, or are you scratching? Scratching's good. Remember what Davy Crockett's motto was, at least Fess Parker's motto? He said, "Be sure you're right. And go ahead." That was kind of his Boy Scout motto. Be sure you're right, then go ahead. And that's what we need to do. We talked about praying that our motive's right, that our action is right, that we're not just messing up, but we are actually moving in a positive direction and helping and serving and giving and leading. And when you're sure you're right, when you've prayed about it, when you've sourced it, when you're sure you're doing the right thing, then go ahead. But don't just charge on when you should have listened to the criticism. You know, you don't want to go ahead doing the wrong thing. But be sure you're right. Or at least relatively confident that you're right. And then go ahead. Persistence is the ultimate test of leadership. Persistence. One secret of success is to outlast your critics. Someone asked, how do you get to be an oak tree? It says an oak tree is just a little nut that refused to give his ground. You know, we may be a little nut sometime, but plant yourself firmly, be sure you're right, and go ahead. I want to close with a quote that you've undoubtedly heard from Theodore Roosevelt. And Theodore Roosevelt kind of summed this up this way, about hearing the criticism, about doing a job, about being a leader, about being a servant, about life in general, and how you respond to things and what we do. Roosevelt said, it's not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles. Like Tyne Daly says, you know, the critic is a guy that doesn't actually join the battle but comes out shooting the wounded after the battle's over. He said, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, and who strives valiantly, who errs and comes up short again and again, because if you do something, you will make mistakes, because there's not an effort without error and shortcomings, but who does actually strive to do the deed, who knows the great enthusiasm and great devotion, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who knows, who at best knows in the end triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, he fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold, timid souls who know neither victory nor defeat. The way to avoid criticism is to say nothing, do nothing, and be nothing. Service to God's people is a mandate. It's not an option. If you serve, if you lead, you will be criticized in the process. And when you are, expect it, source it, pray about it, and go on and do the work.